Evangeline Weiss is Leadership Programs Director for the Task Force, and she's here to talk about the upcoming Creating Change conference later this month and give us her spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Evangeline.
Hello, hello.
Tell us about the task force.
The National LGBTQ Task Force has been around for several decades. We got started in the 70s working on fighting the anti-sodomy laws and have been doing advocacy for LGBT liberation ever since.
How did you become involved?
Well, it's interesting. My relationship to the task force actually started through the Creating Change Conference, which is our national advocacy conference. And in 2007, I started presenting at Creating Change as a trainer, doing leadership development sessions. And when the position that I currently have became open, the job was posted to people who had trained at Creating Change. And so I got to know the organization through the conference as an attendee and as a facilitator, and then later became a staff person.
What would you like to accomplish with your work?
There's two different ways to take that. There's the task force's work, which is about centering race and gender justice and disability justice in our work. And I think that a lot of the Creating Change conference is about bringing all of the different communities and subcultures that make up the LGBT movement together so that we can hash out how is it that we work together in coalition building, how is it that we recognize there are lots of different ways to seek out social justice and work for social justice. So the conference is really a place for people to experience other folks using similar strategies to them, whether it's campaigns or it's organizational change or it's higher education or it's public schools. Whatever your particular work is in the LGBT movement, at Creating Change, you can meet other people who are working for social justice and LGBT liberation in those same ways. But you can also work across tactics and meet people who are using different strategies that can inform the work that you're doing. So the conference is really an exciting place to do learning, but it's also a really wonderful place to just network and connect with old friends. A lot of people have been coming to Creating Change for a long time. And so some folks will say, like, this is my 18th year. And every time I come to Creating Change, I always have lunch with my friend who lives 17 states away from me. And it's a really wonderful feeling of reconnecting with folks and hashing out important conversations.
Tell us about the 31st annual Creating Change conference to be held January 23rd to 27th in Detroit, Michigan.
This conference is our third time in Detroit, and our conference has tripled in size, but the hotel has not. So we're going to be packed in at the Renaissance Center in downtown Detroit, and it's going to be a really great time. We're going to be trying some new things. We're going to be showing some films, which we've never shown before, a couple of wonderful films about organizing and racial justice, and one of them is local to Michigan, and one of them is about an organizer in Louisiana. We're going to have over 200 workshops on everything from Kink 101 to Hack the Law to asexual and ace relationships. We do a ton of caucusing at Creating Change. So in addition to workshops where there's panels and presentations, we also have caucuses where people can gather around like identities. So we will have an indigenous caucus, we'll have a bisexuality caucus, there's a black trans men caucus, so various identity groups meeting and talking together. We do some day-long institutes at Creating Change, so the first 2 days of the conference are these really deep dives into different topics. You spend the whole day together with anywhere from 100 people to 400 people going through a training together. And then starting on Thursday night, we have our opening plenary, which is going to be focused on Detroit and hosted by the wonderful Michelle Brown, which is going to lift up some of the interesting and particular organizing strategies that are emerging in Detroit. There's a lot of ways that Detroit is a mirror to the country of what it means to be working with the different communities trying to get access to services, what happens when there's all kinds of development issues in downtowns and how that impacts LGBT people, how that impacts people who are wanting to make a living wage. So Thursday night is going to be a really fantastic plenary. And then we have all day Friday and Saturday trainings that are anywhere from 90 minutes to 3 hours and on a range of topics. Our State of the Movement address is given by our Deputy Executive Director and our Executive Director, and that's on Friday afternoon, Ray Carey and Kira Johnson. Then we also have a full day of workshops on Saturday. Saturday's plenary is going to be brought to us by Mirror Memoirs, which is an organization of genderqueer, trans, and LGBT folks of color who are activists around sexual abuse survivorship and how to lead from a place of healing and recognizing that we have a lot of work to do around violence and harassment and boundary violations within the LGBT community, but also in society at large. So that's kind of looking at the Me Too movement work from an LGBT-specific lens. And then on Sunday, we have more workshops. We have a fabulous brunch, and we do an interfaith service. There's a whole thread throughout the conference for people of faith and leaders of faith to kind of talk about how we engage faith communities to take their church, if you will, out into the street or their synagogue or their mosque. But how do we take our spiritual beliefs and enact them through our political activism? And then also the flip side, if you're an organizer, you're trying to make change in your community, how can you tap into the faith-based organizations in your community to do social justice work? So that's one thread that people will experience throughout the conference.
How do you see our LGBTQ community moving forward in 2019?
That's a great question. I mean, last year there was certainly a feeling at the conference sort of uniting our resistance against what is a really troubling and terrible time. And at the same time, I think I'm holding that the LGBT movement has been doing this for a long time. We've been seeing our trans sisters of color being killed in and experiencing violence in astronomical levels, and it's so unacceptable. So I think there's a tremendous amount of work to be done for cis people or people who do not identify as genderqueer and or trans. There's so much work for us to do understanding the violence and the policing that trans and genderqueer people experience. And then, of course, race runs through this. So as a white person, I'm really aware of the degree to which racism is perpetuated through LGBT movement work and how we have to do a much better job in our organizations and in our coalitions to lift up the leadership and follow the leadership of people of color. So I feel like the real message right now in this incredibly oppressive time is to look at how power and privilege is operating in our immediate environment. So in your household, in your school, in your workplace, in your political work, in your volunteer work, how is it that power and privilege is sort of reinvesting in this thing? It's easy to blame the guy across the aisle. It's easy to say, well, I'm not a fundamentalist Christian. I'm not a hater. I'm not a Republican. It's really easy to push that stuff away and make it about the other. And I think the harder work for us to do, especially because we hold minority identities, is to recognize like that I'm perpetuating it too, by some of the assumptions I'm making, by the people that I'm choosing to spend my time with or to donate my money to. So how can we all really turn up our accountability on a personal level, I think is really important. And then I think holding our organizations accountable. You know, the task force recently became a POC majority organization. And we've had to really sit with, like, what does it mean to follow different cultural, like, North Star, if you will. And I think that's the kind of discernment and the kind of commitment that more organizations and more communities across the movement need to be making.
With LGBTQ teens are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids struggling in these times?
This is something that I think about all the time. I get disheartened. It's really hard to do this work. It's hard to organize nationally. It's hard to organize remotely. And I often think about the young people in rural communities or in communities that are really disenfranchised from LGBT space. And I think about what it takes to be that 18-year-old saving up your money from your summer job and determined to get on a bus and come to Detroit and use our community housing and apply for our scholarship and volunteer at the conference to get the discounts in LGBT majority space. And I think that that's one of the things that I love about creating change. So for young people who are experiencing bullying, for teachers who are afraid to come out in their schools, coming to a space where LGBT folks are the majority and experiencing a mirror back to you of, yes, it is beautiful and healthy and wonderful, and there's a million right ways to be queer, is such a powerful and important thing. In communities, the task force works really hard. Right now in Michigan, several of my colleagues are working on a comprehensive sex education curriculum organizing and also working to make sure that GSAs establish themselves in schools, gay-straight alliances. There's a ton of research that says that a school with a gay-straight alliance is actually safer for everyone than a school that does not have a GSA. So straight kids benefit from GSAs. The process that a school goes through to have a GSA is a process in which a message is sent to the student body and to the faculty that this is a school where gender is going to be accepted no matter how it presents, and that kids can explore looking and sounding and dressing how they need to figure out who they are, and that that kind of openness helps everybody, not just LGBT kids.
How can people get information about the task force and also the Creating Change Conference?
The Creating Change Conference has this fabulous website. It's very comprehensive. The program is already up on our website because the conference opens on January 23rd. And so you can go to www.creatingchange.org to see all about the schedule and what's going to be happening there. And then the National LGBTQ Task Force has a website that is www.thetaskforce.org. So two different websites, two fabulous opportunities to learn more about our work.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
A lot of folks ask us if they can just walk in, if they have to register online. And so our online registration ends on January 12th. But you are welcome if you end up driving to Detroit, flying to Detroit, or you live in Detroit. You are welcome to walk in and be part of Creating Change without pre-registering. So January 12th is the last day to register online, and then walk-ins are welcome.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
I feel incredibly lucky. I feel like the job that I have at the task force is really a gift. I have a tremendous amount of opportunity to design and facilitate work that is really meaningful. And so when I get really frustrated and I'm really angry and I don't feel like things are going my way, I just remind myself that I get to work on LGBT liberation every day. I get to be who I am, and I get to do work that is really important to me. So I would say that my mantra is, I get to work on LGBT liberation.